All right, welcome everyone. Happy Monday. Today is Monday, February 10th. This is the Transportation Committee of the Minnesota Senate. The time is 3:06 p.m. We are in room 1100 of the Minnesota Senate building. A quorum is present. Attending remotely is Senator McEwen from Duluth, Minnesota. With that, Senator Jasinski will kick off with you. Senate File 950. Members, we have four bills on the agenda today. This bill will refer, should you seek to support it, we will move it on to Commerce. One bill will move on, I believe, to the floor, and two bills will hold over for possible inclusion. Senator Jasinski, would you like to start with the A1 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd move the A1 amendment, please.
Senator Jasinski moves the A1 amendment, author's amendment. This is the Committee of Origin, and this is the first hearing. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for hearing Senate File number 950. This is pretty much a technical bill, should be non-controversial, and I have Mr. Hill here today who knows the bill way better than I do, so I'm going to turn it right over to him. Just so you know, the amendment is something that was brought up by DVS. We met with the stakeholders today. Everybody's in agreement, and it brings the bill into the order that we need to. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Hill.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hill. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, sir, Chairman Dibble and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Todd Hill with Hill Capital Strategies, and I'm here on behalf of our client, Copart. Copart is a national vehicle auction service company with three locations in Minnesota that primarily services insurance company total loss vehicles. Senate File 950 addresses two unique problems for the insurance and salvage industries. In the first scenario, there are times when an insurance carrier has brought a vehicle to one of Copart's locations that's been declared a total loss. The claimant has been paid for that claim. However, the insurance company is unable to acquire the title for that vehicle, and then it presents some difficulties in transferring that title into the insurance company's name and then into the auto auction company. This bill, Senate File 950, would create a process like what is common in about 41 other jurisdictions in all of our neighboring states where they can file for the title from DVS after they've given proper notice to the vehicle owner. The second scenario is a little bit unique as well, and it addresses vehicles that are abandoned at our locations. There are times where insurance companies have cars delivered to our auto auction or salvage auction prior to the claim being settled. And there are some instances where the claim may not be settled and may be denied. And often with low value vehicles, those cars are often left at our location. And we're unable to sell the car, to move the car, or transfer the car. So this bill would provide an opportunity for us to notify the vehicle owner that we are going to, in fact, seek title for that vehicle and would set up a process for doing that. I know of no opposition to the bill, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Questions, members? All right. Senator Jasinski, would you like to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd request you approve Senate File number 950 and re-refer to Commerce Committee, please.
As amended.
As amended.
All right. All in favor, say aye. Aye. Opposed, say no. Motion carries. All right. Next up, Senator Howe. Senate File 1075. Welcome, Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senate File 1075 is a bill to, right now, current law requires you, if you have a doctor's prescription to get heavy tint on your windows, you have to get it. In 2008, they changed it to you have to get it a new prescription from or a new doctor's slip every 2 years. What this bill would do was say that if the physician says that it's permanent, that you could leave that on, you wouldn't have to go to the doctor over and over again. And to discuss this, I have Dave Sutherland here, who is a retired state trooper who would like to give some testimony on this, why, what the need of this bill is.
Great, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sutherland. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
David Sutherland. Chairman Dibble, Ranking Member Jasinski, and committee members, thank you for allowing me to testify today. A brief background of why I'm here today. In February 2021, my wife had a serious fall in Austin, Texas. 4 days later, we returned from Texas and went to one of my son's JV basketball games. In between the two games, the noise became louder, the fans became louder, and became more music. My wife was not able to handle the noise, so we left and went directly to St. Cloud Hospital ER. After two CAT scans and multiple medications to reduce the headache, it was determined she had suffered a severe concussion. In the following weeks and months, she has or had severe headaches due to the sunlight, bright lights in the house, things like that. After one of her appointments, her doctor gave her a prescription for a window tint for her vehicles. And that seemed to help somewhat when we were driving. But after seeing many doctors and going through many different types of treatment, it was determined she has a permanent brain injury. At the time of my retirement from the State Patrol in 2006, the note that she received from the prescription she received from the doctor was appropriate and met the standards. In August of 2025, Patty was stopped by a state trooper in my area for the window tint. She did provide the letter from the doctor to the trooper, and at that time we learned that the statute 169.71 had been amended in 2008, where it had to be renewed every 2 years. Later that day, she made a request through her MyChart through her clinic, and several days later, she's able to get a renewed prescription from the doctor. At this time, I contacted Senator Howe on the situation and recommended that 169.71 be amended to, when a doctor or physician indicates a medical condition is permanent, that that prescription is for lifetime. And as I read Senate File 1075, I believe the amended changes are precise and appropriate. I also believe that the medical professionals do not need to be burdened any further than they already are every 2 years just to have a prescription renewed for something that's going to be a lifetime issue. And I'm sure that in addition to Patty, there are many other people in the state of Minnesota that would come qualify for this type of amendment to the statute and would fall into this category. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Sutherland. I assume you're the only one who's going to be testifying. I have Patty listed here as a testifier as well. Okay, thank you. Questions, members, for Mr. Sutherland?
Mr. Chair, to give people an idea of why this needs to be done is just to give you some examples of medical conditions, you know, photosensitivity, light sensitivity, eye conditions like glaucoma, cataracts, post-surgery recovery, neurological conditions like multiple sclerosis and chronic migraines, and there's other issues here too. So to me, if you've got a permanent condition, I think with a physician's doctor slip that says that's what it is, I think that should suffice even if you get pulled over. So that's the bill and that's the conditions.
Great, thank you. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Howe, for bringing this to the committee. I have to say that I've had some experience with this with a neighbor who is a very, very good friend who had the disease called porphyria. Porphyria is a disease that sunlight causes triggers a reaction when sunlight falls on your skin, and it causes the liver to produce a darkened bile, and it will kill you. It is something that my neighbor was one of 1,300 people in the world that was diagnosed with this when she was 13 years old. And it became such a big problem with her that she would not be able to go out in the sunlight. She always had to have clothing on that would cover her skin. And in Thanksgiving of 1986, she rode in a car at the passenger side and had sunlight playing on her bare arm. And that wound up actually finally killed her because she had to have a liver transplant, and she managed to get through that and then lived a few more years. But that was a very serious disease. I've only heard of one other person that has had that disease called porphyria, and it is something that has led to the thought that, you know, that people have that sensitivity to sight that led to the legends of Dracula. And this was a real disease. It was permanent, and she needed to have tinted windows, and she couldn't get them at the time. And so, tragically, we lost her. So I think that this is a really very good bill, and I thank you for bringing it, and it would have made a big difference in her.
Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Howe. Again, I'm just going to echo those thoughts. I think it's a pretty straightforward bill, and I know it may be a small portion of it, but I think you're reducing the health care costs for Minnesotans. I think it's a good bill, so thank you.
Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will be the third one to echo. I think this is a good bill, but I guess I just had a thought, and maybe you have the answer. It seems like it would be fairly inconvenient for you to constantly get pulled over when law enforcement sees the window tint. Is there some sort of identification, a sticker or something that's on your vehicle so that you wouldn't get pulled over all the time? Because that seems like it would make sense if you're going to have the window tint permanently.
Senator, I have a...
Mr. Sutherland.
I have a suggestion that may help. Right now, as a law enforcement officer, whatever department, and they can run a registration on a car. If someone from DPS IT division could make an amendment to where when a law enforcement officer checks a registration on the vehicle, there could be a small spot on that registration that could say something to the effect of tint, permanent, abbreviated, or something on that order, similar to how a restriction would be on a driver's license. So when you that license plate is run, you would see it was a permanent tint, and you may or may not want to stop that car just for the tint then. And that would only be on the ones that are permanent.
Senator Farnsworth or Senator Howe, did you want to respond to that idea or that suggestion?
Well, I don't know exactly how we would craft that as an oral amendment, but I would love to put it on there. The other thing is I think that would go along with if you had a permanent registration where your license plate stayed with you instead of the car. When they run the registration, they'd automatically know that, you know, that would be there. But I like the idea. I don't know if we have time to draft that or if we can do that.
I have a suggestion. Why don't we just send this bill on its way, but we'll hang on to this idea. I'm sure it'll trigger a fiscal note, so that'll create a conversation. But we have all this, you know, blackout play money, so we have some resources. So why don't we hang on to the idea and come back to it, and we can maybe work it into our finance bill.
Sounds good.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Jasinski.
And I don't think we have anybody from DPS, but I think a couple years ago, maybe it was in 2023, didn't we pass a bill? You can't even pull a car over for license tabs being expired, so I don't know if this even applies. Can they pull a car over for having tinted windows? I mean, that changed significantly in 2023, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Good on you, Senator Jasinski. Got your... Took your opportunity there. Are we having a study on that coming up soon?
I think we might.
All right. The discussion will continue. I actually did, I won't get into it, but this whole window tinting thing, I had a constituent who was grumpy about the enforcement of that. So we did have at least our local law enforcement look into the enforcement pieces of that. So with that, anything further, members? All right, Senator Howe, a motion, please, to send 1075 to the floor.
I move that Senate File 1075 be passed and re-referred to...
The Senate floor.
The Senate floor.
All right. Anything further, members?
Nope.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. Senator Johnson Stewart.
Melissa, you can sit here. Thank you, sir. Hello, Simon. There you go.
Welcome, Senator Stewart. We have Senate File 1001. Please begin whenever you're ready.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1001 provides $300,000 a year to the 494 Corridor Commission, which is a transportation management organization that has received state funding in the last decade. The 494 Corridor Commission is a joint powers organization comprised of the member cities of Bloomington, Richfield, Edina, Eden Prairie, and Minnetonka that formed to work together to address traffic congestion on the 494 corridor and to reduce the amount of cut-through and spillover traffic on city streets that occurs when 494 is congested. The 494 Corridor Commission created a TMO outreach program called Commuter Services to engage employers along the corridor and to offer commute programs and connect employers with resources, which ultimately slow the growth of congestion. Commuter Services focuses on helping people finding alternatives to driving alone. The 494 Corridor Commission actions reduce traffic congestion and improve air quality and ultimately help us to achieve Minnesota's emission reduction goals. The 494 Corridor Commission, as an additional bonus, also provides technology assistance and transfer to outstate communities. And so today I have Melissa Madison, the Executive Director of the 494 Corridor Commission and Commuter Services, to tell you more about the program. Melissa?
Welcome, Ms. Madison. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Dibble. Melissa Madison, pardon me, Executive Director of the 494 Corridor Commission and Commuter Services. Thank you for the opportunity for this bill to be heard, and thank you, Senator Johnson Stewart, for your support. Good afternoon, members of the committee. The 494 Corridor Commission is made up of five cities along 494 and along the most congested part of 494, including Bloomington, Richfield, Edina, Eden Prairie, Minnetonka, and Richfield. Fun fact, according to the Metropolitan Council, people from 85 out of 87 counties in Minnesota use this stretch of 494 on a daily basis to get to the airport and to the Mall of America. The 494 Corridor Commission formed itself back in 1986 to address traffic congestion and cut through traffic, as Senator Johnson Stewart indicated, that spills onto city streets. The Corridor Commission did a study of commute mode use amongst people who work along 494 and found 95% drive alone to work, 4% carpool, 1% take transit. And in the same survey, 30% indicated they would be willing to carpool if they could find someone to carpool with, and another 30% in the same survey indicated they would be willing to try transit for their commute. And that is when the 494 Corridor Commission hired our staff called Commuter Services, or you may have also heard us referred to as the 494 TMO. We provide individualized resources to help drive alone commuters find a carpool partner or join or start a van pool, receive customized transit itineraries with correlating transit schedules and two free passes to give it a try, as well as great resources for bicycle commuting, and deep resources for employers, managers, and companies regarding setting up telework or expanding a telework program. We work with 1,200 employers to help us reach their employees with resources to help their commuters try a mode other than driving alone. In your packet is our annual results summary, where you can see in an average year we convert 5,500 drive-alone commuters into a sustainable commute mode, which results in an estimated 56 million vehicle miles avoided as a direct result of commuter services outreach. We survey commuters at the time that we help them to learn the primary commute mode, which is often drive alone, and we survey them again after we assist them with the customized one-on-one transportation resources to find out how often are they using their alternative mode for their commute, which is how we're able to report back to you that in an average year, 5,500 individuals convert from driving alone into an alternative mode. And the 56 million vehicle miles avoided equates to over 23,000 metric tons of CO2 emissions saved, and it would take over 1 million mature trees to achieve the same results. Commuter services is largely funded by a federal congestion mitigation air quality grant, which requires local match. Our five local member cities are not able to keep up with the local match required to access the federal grants available to leverage the work that we do to help reduce traffic congestion. The legislature has awarded us funding four times previously with bipartisan support, and we thank you very much for that. In the past two sets of funding, we were able to help 504 companies on a statewide basis with their telework programs to give them training on best practices, how to train managers on managing by deliverables. And the House Transportation Committee asked us to become a clearinghouse for jobs that are in Minnesota that people who live in rural Minnesota could look to for a telework job. We've been able to list over 300 Minnesota companies that hire teleworkers and hybrid workers on our Twin Cities telework website as a result. On a small budget, we are successful at helping reduce traffic congestion, and we are asking for the state's help to continue this work. Our work aligns with the state's goal to reduce vehicle miles traveled, and which will thereby reduce traffic transportation emissions. And we thank you so much for your time and consideration.
Thanks, Tony. Great. Thank you, Ms. Madison. Anything further? Any further testifiers? Senator Johnson Stewart. All right. Questions, members? All right. Very good. So this is just another of the TMOs. I think we had a great hearing on TMOs and their role that they play. I think I've articulated this before, would like to figure out a more kind of stable, secure, reliable source of funding so that it's not just the one-off from time to time. I think they clearly add a lot of value, enjoy broad support in the business community and elsewhere, because they help people make those connections that you just described so ably. So a larger project, stay tuned. All right, with that, if there's nothing further, we will lay Senate File 001 on the table for possible inclusion in our future finance bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you.
Excellent. All right, so I'm going to see. I know that Senator Fateh had three bills up in another committee right now. So I think what will happen is I will take a shot at presenting Senate File 1091. So, Senator Johnson Stewart, would you mind?
Thank you, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So Senate File 1091 is a proposal to provide $10 million per year in 26 and 27 in general fund dollars for grants to cities of the first class for traffic calming infrastructure improvements. And then there's a description on how exactly those grants would be distributed, and then some definition of what traffic calming improvements are. As you can well imagine, they're additions to local residential streets that allow for greater livability, greater safety and security for folks who are living, working, playing along those streets, particularly children. What brings the bill to us today is, of course, the ongoing effort for cities to stretch their transportation dollars as much as they can. We had the hearing on cost participation and the fact that the state dollars that support our cities through the MSA formula is tapped dry and used up, and our property tax support for our local roads likewise is stretched very, very thin. I know particularly in the city of Minneapolis, traffic calming applications initiated by residents only serve a tiny, tiny fraction. The amount of available resources only serves a tiny, tiny fraction of those residents who would like some of these kinds of things to occur on their local roads. The first question that might occur to everyone, of course, is why cities of the first class? There's nothing, it's just, you know, it's just how the bill was written. It's a proposal to maximize the availability of these dollars, but similar to a bill that I brought a number of years ago, actually I think it was Rochester, who spoke up and said, we'd like to do that too. And that was, of course, the effort to maintain local control over speed limits on our local residential streets. And so that became the feel-good bill of the year, and everyone got to do that. So this, of course, represents a substantial amount of resource, $20 million from the general fund, and we know exactly what's happening with our resources this year. So I still thought it would be worthwhile to have Senator Fatte introduce this bill. He initiated the idea in his office along with conversation with folks at the local level. I signed on to the bill, and it's a good conversation to have about traffic calming and what it means, why it's important to people and their quality of life, and whether or not it's appropriate for the state to step in and help out with some of this local effort. With that, we have a couple of fine individuals. We have Randy Newton from the city of St. Paul, who's a city traffic engineer, and Ethan Foley from the city of Minneapolis, who is available for questions or can lay his brilliance on us if he so desires. So when we start with Mr. Newton.
Thank you, Chair Johnson Stewart and committee members. My name is Randy Newton. I am the city traffic engineer with the city of St. Paul. Primary responsibility in my role is to leading the city's transportation safety efforts. As many of you know here, we really are facing a transportation safety epidemic in the country, and we're seeing that both here in Minnesota and in St. Paul directly, as we're seeing really a rise in fatal and serious injury crashes across the network. To illustrate this, I just want to share a couple of key facts with you. In the last 5 years in St. Paul alone, we've had 74 fatal injury crashes and 282 serious injury crashes. So I'm going to pause there for a second. All these are life-altering crashes, and that number is significant. So that's 15 fatal injury crashes and 70 life-altering crashes per year. The other really sobering fact here is that we've seen a 90% increase in our fatal injury crashes in St. Paul since before the pandemic. Again, these are just unacceptable numbers, and really when I think about these numbers, I think it's fair to say that we really are failing our constituents, and we need to do a better job in transportation safety. In recognition of this and to combat the epidemic we're seeing, the city has developed a transportation safety action plan, which identifies specific priorities and actions to improve transportation in the city. The plan was completed in collaboration with our partners at MnDOT and Ramsey County, and done was with the community engagement and involvement. As part of this effort, and in 2023, the city adopted a Vision Zero commitment. This commitment included a commitment to reduce the number of fatal and serious injury crashes by 50% within 10 years, and a complete reduction by 2045. Let's just say we have a lot of work to do to get to that point. A couple of key items I just want to quickly share from that safety action plan work is that there's a community expectation that we act and that we act quickly. We're really not doing enough, and people want to see things happen now. We have a lot of needs and a lot of work to do. This is not easy. There's needs throughout the system. Also, we have a very old transportation system. At our current rate, it's going to take us over 100 years to rebuild our system. And so we really need, like, having safety funding really helps us address some of those needs on a more timely manner, in a more timely manner. So in conclusion, I just say this bill would really help us make substantial improvements in our safety efforts as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Newton. Senator Dibble, am I supposed to open up to questions after each testifier or wait until all the testifiers first?
That's entirely up to you.
All right. Well, I have some questions for Mr. Newton, and then I'll open it up to my committee members. Mr. Newton, I've done a lot of work with county road safety plans and county road safety initiatives. I'm surprised that you have so many fatals in the city of St. Paul. Could you tell me what kind of crashes you're seeing in the city of St. Paul and which ones are the most, the most dangerous?
Thank you, Chair. A couple things I would share. One is that, I mean, as I talk about some of the safety work and talk with my colleagues throughout the state, transportation safety looks different in every community. So it looks different in St. Paul and Minneapolis than it does for our suburban counterparts or for MnDOT. Our roadway networks are different. Our users are different. I think one of the things we see is a lot of our crashes are on our collector and arterial network, sort of on our busier roads. That's no surprise. We see a lot of accidents at intersections. Intersections are a key issue. Our pedestrians and bikes are overrepresented in our fatal and serious injuries. So the fact of the matter is that those are more vulnerable users. They're not protected by a shell. So when they do get an accident, those automatically are more serious injury. They're more serious crashes. So very much are just the presence of pedestrians and bikes on our network, which is much greater than, again, in a suburban community or on a highway, makes them more vulnerable and makes our needs different than other communities.
Thank you. Do any of our committee members have questions for Mr. Newton? Senator Howe?
I was going to wait until all the testimony was in, but my concern is coming from a fire response, emergency response type thought process, how do these things affect the emergency responders? Because I would have to believe that if it's going to slow down normal traffic, it's going to slow down the response, and especially when you're dealing with a heart attack or that or a stroke, those crucial minutes are vital to survival. So I'm wondering, how do you, when you look at these traffic measures, how do you deal with that to minimize the effect on your emergency responders?
Mr. Newton?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator. Yeah, I think this is something we're looking at. So one thing I'd say is I don't think we see any one treatment that we would use everywhere. Their treatments are very site specific and something that we'd want the flexibility to sort of determine where and what we need. You know, I said that we worked with our partners at MnDOT and the county. We're also working closely with our partners at St. Paul Fire and St. Paul Police in terms of identifying what treatments work and what treatments work for them. So this is a collaborative effort as we move forward. I'd say generally speaking, when I've talked to our emergency services folks, is that they really see, I mean, they're the ones that are the first responders. They see what the crash is and anything that, as with anything, if we can prevent the crash, that's the first step. We clearly need to work with them to make sure that anything we're doing is not overly affecting their service time, but generally they've been supportive of our efforts.
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. If I could put Mr. Folley on the spot, he's dealt with this question quite a bit as they've implemented traffic calming measures on local roads. They work closely with first responders, but he can answer better than I can, so.
Thank you, Chair, Senators. My name is Ethan Folley. I'm the Vision Zero Program Coordinator for the City of Minneapolis, working on our traffic safety efforts. So it's a really good question. One of the things that we always are doing is every one of our traffic calming treatments in Minneapolis is approved by our fire chief. And so we have that proactive review as part of our process. And so there's a lot of coordination happening every time. And so we're also working a different measure. There are something called a speed cushion, which is a speed hump that's specifically designed to allow emergency vehicles which have a wider wheelbase to pass through, but other vehicles are not able to, they are slowed down by speed hump. So that's That's an option that we're actually going to be piloting this year in Minneapolis. And then when we, different situations, we might have roundabouts or traffic circles that we're considering as well. And those are also designed specifically to ensure emergency vehicles can make it, and they're working well for that as well. And then, you know, I think to Mr. Newton's point, you know, those local streets are different than the busier streets, right, where we have to, so the treatments have to be a little different. But, you know, those speed humps can work on a street where the fire truck, that might be the last block that they're going to a house on. So the change, it slows you down to 15 miles an hour for that last quarter of a block or whatever, but that doesn't impact overall response time very much at all. So those are the conversations we're regularly having with our emergency response.
Excellent. Senator Howell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, and that works, and I know that those work for the big trucks, the big rigs, but for a lot of the ambulance and EMS folks, those pathways don't work real well as far as the ability not to affect their speed, because they don't have that long wheelbase that our the big rigs do. So I know that that's an issue, but I appreciate the fact that you're actually enclosing them in the loop. I hope it's not just the fire chief, and I hope he's talking down to the folks down that meet the ground, because they're the folks that are actually having to deal with it. But thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. I have a quick follow-up question, if I could, for Mr. Folley. So I have spent quite a bit of time in South Minneapolis, and nothing is more frustrating than coming up to one of those traffic calming situations where I have to turn left, turn right unexpectedly. I'm guessing, but perhaps you could confirm, that when there's an emergency vehicle that goes to a call, they have those as part of their GPS and part of their wayfinding. Can you comment on that, please?
So I think I'll respond. Are you talking about when you're like diverted and you have to? I don't think we do that anymore. That was a bad idea, but maybe Mr. I find them frustrating too. I just ran across one the other day that I didn't know was there, and I was pretty ticked because I got diverted a few blocks out of my way, but maybe Mr. Folley can respond.
Yeah, Chair. So yes, those diverters are, we don't really do diverters anymore. It's very rare. So that's where you kind of come to the end of the block and the traffic all has to turn. And so, and it breaks up the street grid, and so most of those are a legacy of 30 to 40 years ago. Now, I will say, certainly those are all in the GPS, and the emergency responders are well aware of those, and you know, are routing around with those in mind.
Yeah, there's one by my sister's house. And now there's been another change near her house, so I have to find a whole different route now to get to her house. It's very annoying. So, yeah, this is not that. Madam Chair, unless there are questions, we do have one of our testifiers who was running a little late is with us to share some testimony, if we may.
Yes, Senator Dibble, actually, so is Mr. Folley's testimony complete?
Well, he's
he was just... Oh, just for questions. All right.
Yeah, but both will stay on hand for more questions.
Great. Then we have Minneapolis City Council Member Arun Chowdhury, who's going to come
yes.
up and speak. I just want to offer up one other thing, Senator Howe. We have a new roundabout in our neighborhood, and it was specifically designed for emergency vehicles to drive straight over it. And I know that that's a design standard that's available, so I think that's an important thing to note as well.
Well, you know, thank you, Madam Chair, for bringing that up. I'm actually having been all over the world with the Army's transportation system. You know, overseas, we call those traffic circles, and I actually like them, except for my anxiety goes up, because that's where our opposition like to put the IEDs. So I get a little, my heart rate goes up every time I go to one. Not because, but if they design them right, I think they're excellent. I'm not sure I like the design on most of the ones we have around here, but overseas, they actually do move the traffic very, very well.
They do, indeed. I don't think we have any IEDs in Minnetonka, but I'll check into that.
Stay tuned, but I hope not.
All right, with that, I see that our next testifier has found her way to the microphone, so I'll let you introduce yourself.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Oreen Chowdhury. I'm a Minneapolis City Council member representing the 12th Ward, and I'm so honored to be before you today. I was just running from one of our committees over to yours, and I'm happy to voice my strong support for Senate File 1091, which would provide $20 million in grants to cities of the first class for traffic calming infrastructure improvements. This funding is urgently needed to address the growing traffic safety crisis in Minneapolis and then across the state and region. Speeding is the number one traffic safety challenge we face, and it has increased significantly since 2020. It is also among the top needs that constituents in my district and throughout the city of Minneapolis reach out about. Regionally, there's also been a significant spike since 2020 in crashes that has not been able to go down to 2019 figures. To share some numbers with you, last year alone, more than two-thirds of traffic deaths in Minneapolis involved speeding. Over the past 3 years, 41 people have lost their lives in crashes on Minneapolis streets due to speeding. These deaths are unacceptable, should be wholly preventable, and every one of these community members should be alive today. Senate File 1091 would allow us to make critical improvements that shift behavior on the roadway focused on traffic safety, which would improve neighborhood livability and ensure peace of mind for Minnesotans driving on our roadway, Minnesotans crossing the street with their kids to parks and schools, and Minnesotans who are a part of our senior community. Our streets are made to ensure the mobility of people we serve, and they should be safe for everyone. Minneapolis has already taken steps to address this issue. Where we've installed traffic calming measures, we've seen real improvements in safety. However, the need far outweighs our current resources. After 3 years of operating a neighborhood traffic calming program, we have over 1,400 eligible applications waiting to be addressed. With current funding, we can only complete about 80 to 100 projects. The estimated cost to address these needs is $20 million. We urge the committee to pass this bill and provide funding necessary to save lives and make our streets safer. Minneapolis is ready to work with the committee and stakeholders to ensure this funding become a reality. And I also did want to share a note from a fellow council member, Councilmember Koski, who has been working really, really deeply on traffic calming within her community alongside other council members. She just wanted to send the message that the need for better traffic calming is not just a broad issue, it's deeply personal for communities like the one around Cedar Avenue, Edgewood Boulevard, and Nokomis Parkway, an intersection in South Minneapolis, which faced serious safety risks for over 20 years. For years, this intersection was a constant source of worry for anyone passing through, whether on foot, on bike, or in vehicle. It was a place where accidents happened regularly, ranging from minor crashes to major collisions, property damage, and injuries of all kinds, culminating in a fatal hit and run that shook our community. This heavily trafficked intersection sees nearly 18,000 vehicles and 150,000 pedestrians and cyclists daily, but its infrastructure wasn't designed to accommodate such high traffic, leaving it unsafe and unpredictable. And for years, residents asked for safer solutions. And thanks to the collaborative effort between the City of Minneapolis, Parks and Recreation Board, and Hennepin County, we were able to finally start seeing change. We piloted several short-term traffic calming measures, and after gathering data and engaging with community, it's clear these changes have made a real difference in improving safety as we transition to more permanent solutions, so we can do with confidence knowing we are creating a safer environment for our residents. And I just thank her for sharing that note. It was an incident that just reverberated around our South Minneapolis community, and it was interjurisdictional in nature. And once we were able to pilot some of these traffic calming measures, we haven't seen incidents like that before. And it just speaks to how important and vital a bill like this is, so we can ensure that other areas that are really, really difficult and community members are constantly worried about can be addressed. So thank you again for the opportunity to speak today in support of this and in support of neighborhood safety in our communities.
Thank you. Senator Farnsworth has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. So the letter that the testifier just read talked about some intersections that have been dangerous for 20 years, and those have sort of always existed and probably the sort of places that you would need a roundabout. But Mr. Newton and I think it was
Folly,
Ms. Chowdhury mentioned that it's gotten dramatically worse since the pandemic or since 2020. I'm just wondering if anybody has a hypothesis as to why that might be.
Mm-hmm. Testifiers, whoever wants to pick.
I can start and then I'll pass it to Mr. Folly. I think one of the things that we have noticed in the city of Minneapolis, especially what I notice in my ward, is you can put up as many signs as you want that say that this is the speed limit or 20 is plenty, but the real issue is erratic driving and just a shift in behavior that needs to be addressed. And a way to address behavior is behavior change, and that's why we're looking at these specific roadway improvements that discourage bad driving and encourage just safety on the roads for drivers, pedestrians, cyclists all around. And I'll pass it to Mr. Folly.
Yeah, Chair, Senator. This is something that's not unique to the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. This is a thing that we see around the state as well as around the country since 2020. And there's been a lot of, I think, research into this topic and their theories. But a lot of it just comes down to, 2020 was hard for folks, right? I think we all know that, and everyone feels that in different ways. And when folks are driving, sometimes the stress of everything comes out in how folks drive too. I think we see that. And so at the core, I think a lot of it's still spilling over from that stress. And then that led to kind of changing in norms and behaviors and like what was maybe acceptable changed. And then we're still kind of dealing with that new reality of how do we get folks back to slowing down and being connected and thinking about everyone in their community. But at the core, I think about it on a lot of these streets is, I think about the intersection where someone was driving, it was totally reckless. This person was, they were going 95 miles an hour on a neighborhood street. And they ran through a stop sign and hit somebody and killed a 5-year-old. Mm. And they were physically able, it was reckless, but they were physically able to drive that fast. And when we talk about neighborhood traffic calming, it's how do we make it so that it's clear and it's maybe physically impossible to do something that risky on our local neighborhood streets where kids are moving around with their families around our community. So, it's a combination of factors, though.
Mm-hmm. Senator Dibble?
Thanks. Thank you, Senator Farnsworth, for the question. I don't have an answer to the question. It's been quite vexing why. And, to Mr. Folly's point, it's going on all over the state. And, of course, we see the traffic injury and fatality statistics which have been moving in the wrong direction. So it's a big reason why in 2023 we reestablished and funded once again the Traffic Safety Council. So one thing I think we should probably do as a committee is bring them forward. Actually, there is a traffic safety report that's due on this whole subject of what's happening around traffic safety, crashes, deaths, property damage, and the like. And so I can't remember, maybe Mr. Greenfield or Ms. Boyd or Ms. Ethier, do you remember when that report is due? Is it an annual report? Is it pending? Or is it a big one-time report? I can't quite remember.
Mr. Chair and members, I can check for the members of the committee, but I do know that the traffic disposition analysis has a second round of review, and that's kind of getting into the enforcement kind of component of this issue. And then in terms of the Office of Traffic Safety and the Advisory Council, I believe they are required to submit an annual report, but I can check into that and share with the committee as to what those reporting requirements entail.
All right. So we'll have more examination of this question because it's vexing and maddening. Because we had a really, really great initiative going on in the state for a long time, the Towards Zero Deaths initiative, which is a collaboration of agencies and sectors, propped up by research, and trying to make recommendations and put resource towards, you know, what is it, the four E's, enforcement, engineering, education, and emergency services. And we had some really good trends going for a number of years, and then they just all started going the opposite direction with the onset of the pandemic.
Senator Dibble, our staff just told me that the primary staffer responsible for that report has had a health, not necessarily an emergency, but a health incident that's delayed the report. So we'll get it as soon as they're back to work.
Great.
Thank you. Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as you may have guessed, I have a bit of a hypothesis as to why we might be seeing more of these accidents. And I know personally when I'm out driving, if I happen to be going faster or driving more recklessly than I should be, if I see a squad car, I slow down. And I know that in Minneapolis, I've spoken with the law enforcement groups, and they're down 40% in number. I know in my Senate district, all of the law enforcement agencies are having a hard time recruiting for a number of reasons. And I think, you know, we can point back to the beginning of the pandemic, to the defund the police movement and this whole movement to not support law enforcement. And I think we could point to that specifically, why would there's a big shift from the start of the pandemic. People don't want to be police officers. Police forces can't fill the ranks. There aren't enough squad cars on the road, and that is a deterrent. And so I think, not necessarily, I don't know what this committee could specifically do about that, but supporting our friends in law enforcement would be a good start to show them that we support them, to encourage them to continue to go in that field so that they would be on the streets deterring people from driving that way. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any response from the testifiers? All right. Senator Farnsworth, do you have anything else? Senator Carlson. Nelson, sorry.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. Senator Dibble, there's a lot to like about this 1091 that we're looking at here. And, of course, I speak as a representative of one of those cities of the first class. I would say one thing, though. I have an A1 amendment. Do you guys have that? I'll speak to that while they're bringing out the amendment. So there's a lot to like here. The fact that we know that there's great needs, particularly in our cities of the first class, and as MnDOT has well described, there's just a backlog of transportation needs. And so this could be a way to help with those needs. And I noticed two of the testifiers today mentioned something that was kind of along my thought process as I put together this A1 amendment. And that is that, you know, transportation and safety needs are different in every community. And the amendment that is being passed out is getting to the point that I think we should, yes, support this, but I think we really need to trust our cities of the first class to use that additional money that instead of just restricting it solely to traffic calming measures. Like we noted, there's a huge backlog of local projects in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I can speak to Rochester, Duluth. And so it seems to me that they should be allowed to use these additional dollars, this $20 million in this particular bill, for whatever their needs are. Now, that could be traffic calming, and that's great. But in some cases, it might be something else. And so I just think we're getting just a little bit too prescriptive. We've identified a problem, but I think maybe we're just a little bit too prescriptive in our bill here. So this would just replace, you'll see the very small amendment on line 9. It simply replaces the two words traffic calming with, instead, road, bridge, or traffic safety, which would include traffic calming, but I think it provides that local knowledge and control of how best to spend these dollars.
Senator Dibble, do you have a response?
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Nelson, for the idea. I think it does have merit. I don't feel empowered to accept the amendments. At this point, I'd like to have the opportunity to confer with Senator Fateh. I would suggest that Well, first of all, just to let the committee know, and I think I'd mentioned earlier, we're going to keep this bill here. So, you know, we'll if we actually receive a general fund target of any amount, we might see it come back in the finance bill. And what I can envision is that we could include this language, road, bridge, or traffic safety, including traffic calming. You know, kind of merge the ideas. I don't think the city of Minneapolis or any city of the first class would look askance at any money that is flexible. So there might be a marrying up of these suggestions, road bridge or traffic safety, which could be inclusive of the notion of traffic calming. So would love to continue to work on that should this idea receive resources and have merit in the eyes of this committee.
Sure. Madam Chair.
Sorry.
Thank you so much. Well, with that in mind, Senator Dibble, I think we don't, I can withdraw this amendment so that we do not have to take a vote on it right now, but I appreciate the fact that you and hopefully the chief author are amenable to providing that little bit of flexibility. So that's the intention that I understand, and so I would withdraw my A1 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you.
And Senator Nelson, I pledge that we will continue the conversation, and I will also pledge Senator Fatte's attention to the idea.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I believe that we have a few more questions. Senator Carlson first, and then Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question, I probably already know the answer to it, but probably the best person to respond would be Mr. Newton from St. Paul City Traffic, and that is that do we have a in addition to the Highway Design Standards Manual that covers calming, so that we follow the tried and true and validated solutions mm-hmm. for calming and not go into a lot of experimentation that might not be acceptable to the engineers that are working on this.
Mr. Newton?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator. I think, you know, a lot of this work is, yes, I mean, we're always going to base our designs and establish standards. I think part of the thing we are doing, I think just as engineers and as we're moving forward, we do need to challenge ourselves to be, you know, some of those standards. The roads that we built were built with cars strictly in mind, and that we need to change the design to some extent. But that said, there are established standards that we always work with and that we're working around. And that we'll utilize as moving forward. Part of our safety action plan work is really to sort of identify the biggest needs and then the solutions that can work and then match those up with locations. So I'm very much there's not one size fits all. Depending on the location, we need the flexibility to do different treatments, and those are going to be established treatments.
Can I ask
Madam Chair.
An intermediate question before we get back to you? Mr. Newton, I'm not familiar with the design standards for traffic calming. Where are they contained?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator. There's a lot of different, documents out there. So I don't know if there's an established standards, but we are working with design standards from the state has design standards that we work within. There are different organizations that have presented things. There are different details we might take from different DOTs or different entities that have been utilized. So even though I'd have to do some more work to see what exactly the established standards are, but there are a lot of different work that's been done out there in the engineering system, and we're going to utilize that best information that's out there. And Ethan might be able to speak a little more truth.
Mr. Folley.
Yeah, Chair. So the federal MUTCD, which I know you know, the Manual on Uniform Control Devices, does include information on signage and other markings that relate to different types of traffic calming treatments. So that's federal standards that some of that is guidance and others of its standards that we make sure to follow as it relates to those elements of traffic calming. MnDOT also has a number of guides. They have the several different guides that have different measures that relate to different types of traffic calming treatments. So some of that's in their facility design guide, but they also have specific guidance more focused on walking and biking safety and other things. So in there, they're including treatments, and we look to that guidance as well. And then in And then, as Mr. Newton said, we are, in some cases, we're looking to emerging things that are working in other states. And, you know, I mentioned speed cushions earlier. Well, there aren't any speed cushions currently in Minnesota, but that's why we see it working successfully in other states. And, hey, let's try that here and see if it makes sense. And maybe we work with MnDOT and get something added to their guidance in the future.
Thank you. Senator Carlson, sorry I interrupted you. Do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we've gotten the answer.
All right. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Farnsworth stole a little bit of my thunder on the why we're increasing speeds or why we're seeing increased speeds, so I won't go into too much of that other than, Ms. Chowdhury, what currently is the city of Minneapolis, how many police officers are they down right now?
Madam Chowdhury.
Thank you so much. I know that our approximate number that we are supposed to have is about 737. It might go up depending on population. And we're approximately at that 560 to 570 range. And we recently had a graduating recruit class that we brought in. So we are down.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that answer. So I've also been asking some MnDOT officials on, I have a small city in my district that wants to decrease the speed limit near one of their schools, and one of the replies I got from MnDOT was, is, you know, the biggest thing to stop that is patrolling. Mm-hmm. You have to have people out there, you have to have police officers out there patrolling, because that's what's going to slow people down. So again, to that point, to help people slow down, you know, having law enforcement on the streets is a huge thing. So that's one thing. Just secondly, a little bit concerning, obviously, we haven't got our targets yet, but $20 million seems a lot to me that's going towards cities that probably have 100 times the tax base a lot of other cities have in rural Minnesota. I know one of my towns, Faribault, has done some of these things where they've put some bump outs on sidewalks to try and slow people down. Obviously, it looks good on paper, but I know my public works people and my people driving the snow plows and emergency vehicles, they do not like those because it's a concern there as well. So that does bring up some issues. But, you know, $10 million in 26 and 10 million in 27, and I just got a little vocal about, you know, spending trunk highway funds on state patrol headquarters, because what we heard a couple years ago is they came in for 20 million from the trunk highway funds, but we're going to do the rest out of the general fund or general obligation bonds, and now we have $20 million and it's directed all towards metro cities. And you know, a small city like Faribault's 28,000 still has those choke points where they'd like to slow traffic down, and we don't have any money for them. I think, as Senator Nelson said, each town is different, and now we're looking at possibly spending $20 million. And I can't imagine our target for general funds is going to be very big here in transportation. I've been here 9 years, have never seen a real big target for transportation. I think less than 1% of our general fund comes to go towards transportation. So just a concern on the money, where it's going, again, back to the trooper headquarters, using trunk highway funds for those. Just have some concerns. And then again, you know, rural cities suffer with the same issues that the larger cities do, and we're looking at putting money to the bigger cities that have a lot more tax base, a lot more MSA funds coming in than some of our small cities that have some of the same issues at certain intersections or certain places in their communities. So just my concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. A response?
So what I hear is we make it eligible for all cities and we take it out of the trunk highway fund.
Madam Chair, it's sorry, although that would not be correct.
All right. Sorry. Just trying to cut a deal here.
Any other questions from the committee? I have one. Actually, mine is for Mr. Newton. So Mr. Newton, I've done a decade's worth of work on the County Road Safety Plan, working with the county engineers on implementing what they call their big book of ideas that help to reduce crashes on rural roads. Understanding that cities like St. Paul and Minneapolis, Rochester's and others have high-speed arterials that would have similar traffic patterns and traffic or driver behavior to county roads, I just wonder if either one of you could tell me how much the cities take from those ideas, and do you implement any of the strategies, especially around curves or advance warnings at intersections, et cetera. Perhaps you could just comment on that, both of you, please.
Thank you, Chair. I think, as we've shared, I think we're going to look at every option. So all of our roads are a little bit different, but for the most part, we are in an urban area. I'd say those rural treatments, those like a rural county road, they don't necessarily apply to our system. And ours is much more of a, straight line, intersections every block, sidewalks, heavy pet activity. So those treatments that we're looking at are probably going to be different than what we see on the county road system or what you might have seen in a county safety plan. But that's, there is some correlation, and in some ways, we need to control speed just like they do in the county road system. It just looks a little different on our roadway system.
I'll just add, Chair, that we in Minneapolis, and I think St. Paul as well, our safety action plan work is a very similar approach to the county road safety plan work. You're analyzing what are the challenges. So what's causing our severe and fatal crashes on our streets? Well, in Minneapolis, the number one thing, and the number one thing that's been growing is speeding. And so, but we see the other things. What are the challenges we're facing? And then we identify what are the strategies that can work in our context to meet, those challenges. And so our strategies have evolved since 2020 because of the nature of what we're seeing on our streets is evolving as well. And so, the traffic calming piece is coming out of that recognition of change, but it's a very similar core process to the county road safety process, plan process.
Thank you. Senator Dibble, do you have any final words?
Thank you. Just to thank everyone for their attention, great conversation, good debate, good suggestions. Thank you, Senator Nelson. I'll mention that City of Duluth, Mayor Reinert, who used to be a senator, by the way, sent a letter of support that's in your packet. And so I'll just encourage us to lay this bill on the table for further conversation.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. There is also a, did he mention it? Okay, he did? I'm sorry, this is my first time. Anyway, all right, so tell me what to say. All right, Senator Dibble moves that this bill be laid on the table for further consideration and inclusion in the...
Possible inclusion.
Possible inclusion. All right. Thank you, and thanks for letting me have this opportunity.
Right. And Madam Chair, we will meet on Wednesday with several bills, maybe a report. Senator Jasinski will be leading us off again on Wednesday. And with that, you can adjourn the committee.